Hi, you're listening to After Dinner Conversations, short stories for long discussions. What that means is we get short stories, we select those short stories, and then we discuss them specifically about the ethics and the morality of the choices, the characters, and the situations put us in. Why did you do this? What makes you do this? What makes us good people? What's the nature of truth, goodness, all of that sort of stuff? And hopefully we're all better, smarter people for it, and learn a little bit about why we think the way we think. So thank you for listening. Hi, and welcome back once again to After Dinner Conversation, short stories for long discussions. I am your co-host, Colby, here with Jeremy.
Hello.
Here with Sarah.
Hi there.
Doing it again. I'm gonna try and get this all in a short, compact thing. Like and subscribe. Follow us on social media. We have a Patreon page. We have four anthologies that are on both print and ebook that are on Amazon. If you just search for After Dinner Conversation, or if you go to our website, afterdinnerconversation.com, you can get our monthly magazine and get seven new short stories emailed to you every month for $4.95 a year if you use the discount code HAPPY. Okay. This story is The Perfect Daughter. It's not about your daughter, Jeremy.
It's about mine.
It's about your daughter. That's right. because I forgot to say the guy's name last time. It's by Frederick Silla, S-Y-L-L-A. Pretty awesome writer. Same offer as always. You want me to do this? You guys want to do it? All right. I'm going to quit offering then, unless there's one you speak up later. All right. So this story, I got to be honest, and I loved the story. I thought it was perfectly good and readable and interesting, but I struggled a little bit. It jumped from location to location a little bit. And there were a few times where I was like, so I'm going to skip over that a little bit because maybe you can clear it up. My understanding was it starts off where she's at yoga, the main character, and she is upset. Jane, is her name Jane? What the heck's her
Jane.
Name?
Jane.
Yeah. And she's upset because she's doing these perfect yoga poses and she's upset and she leaves and she just walks out because she's upset that she's so great at yoga. And then I don't really understand how it, and then she tries to do it. She does a meditation. She tries to calm down, blah, blah, blah. What we learn is it jumps to the whole thing that led to this a couple hours earlier where she was confronted with her mom and dad. I think I had a little trouble understanding it. I think at her house, I think while she's putting up, Christmas stuff, but I don't know why. I for some reason, it confused me a little bit. I thought it was at their house, and then part of it makes me think it's her house because she asks him to leave. At any rate, it doesn't really matter for the purpose of the story. The point of the story is that the parents, because they are wealthy, had the ability to genetically engineer their child to be the best version of its genetic lottery that they could have turned up with, right? And they tweaked it because they were rich people with money and blah, 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 near future thing. Okay, we've done enough of these. If that had been all the story had been, honestly, I wouldn't have probably published it, even though it's really well written and it's a great topic. We've just done a lot of those sort of like genetic profiling. The part that I loved about it, and I hope I can hear you guys talk about, is the father's explanation of why he did it. And his explanation, I thought, he starts off and says, are you familiar with the problem of evil? And she goes, yeah. And he says, I am God. If a God is all good and all powerful, why does he allow evil to exist? Why, as a creator, doesn't he create the best version of the world? Shouldn't we blame him for it? When 30 years ago I was offered this procedure, I also became a creator. The enormous responsibility fell on me. If I did not maximize you, I would allow evil to exist because I would consciously create a life worse than it could have been. I had to make a choice just like I would have to cure you of whatever disease you had. So I got to be honest, that paragraph and that discussion is what I was like, you know what? We've done genetically enhanced people enough. We probably wouldn't do that because it's bad. We've done it a lot. But we've never addressed it from this, which is a traditional philosophy question, the problem of evil, right?
Right.
And this idea of if you have the ability to make a better person, don't you have the obligation to now? Or are you allowing the fallacies of the failings of that person to exist by your lack of choice? That's really why I pulled this story. Because the genetic engineering stuff we've done, what was the one? There was the one Odysseus or Farewell Odysseus about the people on Mars who have the dog people.
Oh, yeah.
Right. And we talked about how the genetic things made him superior. So I don't know. I don't know if that's maybe not the only thing interesting about the story, but that was the thing I found interesting about it. I'd be curious to hear what you guys found interesting about it. Or if you want to talk about what I brought up, it's an open forum.
Yeah, no, I mean, that is an interesting question that I don't think we've discussed before. Do we have an obligation to make ourselves better from genetically or as a society? You know, is that what you're asking?
Yeah, what is your obligation to make either yourself or your children better? And what is your obligation, your sort of moral obligation to society or to just not allow evil to exist in the world? What is your obligation to use all of the tools at your disposal, whether they be parenting or medical tools or genetic tools, to make that happen? Like, do you buy the dad's argument that the failure to make good is the choice to create evil in this sort of genetically modified situation?
I mean, specifically,
it's a clever argument.
Yeah. I don't know. He presents it pretty well in this scenario.
Sure. This is why I hate Socrates in some ways, right? Yeah. Because every time you read any of the Socratic dialogues, if you haven't read them, whatever, if you've read a few, you've read enough, it's always Socrates saying like, well, do you agree with this? And the guy going, yeah. And do you agree with this? Yeah. Well, then you must think this. No. Yeah. And it's like, it's really easy to have a great conversation when you're writing both sides of the conversation, right? Like, everyone sounds super clever when, like, it's just you arguing with you and a fake person you created.
Right.
To
be your foil.
Right. To be your foil. To go back to our conversation before. Yeah. Anyway, thoughts? I'll shut up.
I don't know. What do you think, Sarah?
So my initial response to Jane's character was disgust.
Okay, she, why?
So privileged.
Oh, yeah.
Her temper tantrum, it just seems like she's having a temper tantrum. Like, oh, you're perfect. And you think that somehow you got there by your own will. When
your own hard work.
You're never going to be anything other than absolutely perfect, even if your parents hadn't genetically enhanced you.
Why do you say that?
She was born into an incredible amount of privilege.
Oh, sure.
She was going to have every single
all the privilege that comes with money. Good schooling.
Exactly. Good schooling. Right. All of that stuff.
Right.
And so it's just kind of this this rich kid temper tantrum that I'm like, oh my goodness, please.
You just wanted to snatch her by the ear?
Yeah, be like, you know what? You should be using this perfection, this abilities that other people don't have. You should be using this for good. You should be finding a way to serve society.
This is the "with great power comes great responsibility" sort of argument.
Kind of like that, exactly. And as far as her dad goes with his argument, you know, I identified with him maybe almost too easily. So I guess I was kind of hoping that you would have the other side of it. Like, what is the argument against making your children free from the potential of disease or defect at all? You know, what is the argument against that? It was too easy to agree with her dad.
That's interesting. I really thought, I honestly hadn't weighed the other side of it because I assumed that you guys would be against it. Because when we've had this conversation with other stories, you guys talk about the classism that these sort of services create, right? Mm-hmm. That a rich parent can provide, that a rich parent will have rich children because they have the tools to like help them get so far ahead that you'd have to try really hard to grow up in this family and be a failure. Like it would have to be a full-time failure job.
And yet, we see that often, though. We were talking about this, how rich people do not raise their children with any sort of responsibility. They don't. We have so many examples of people who wield incredible power, and they do so irresponsibly.
Sure.
And they appear for personal benefit. To be not very smart at all.
But
and
But I think there's a distinction between sort of the Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, blah, 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 billionaire class versus the typical, like, dad's a doctor, mom's a lawyer, sends their kids to prep school, you know, pays off their student loan. Like, they don't take on student loans, gets them a tutor if they need one. Like, that's a different level of privilege. And I think some of those people, when you look at that group of people, maybe it's a different answer than what you're saying.
Right.
That they use that a little more responsibly. To perpetuate their children's future. I don't know.
Or I'm not to trying provide to shoot, for their... Right.
Yeah, I'm not no, trying to not shoot you all. Down. I'm just...
That's kind of what I was hoping for, though, is because the way he phrased it was like, given this option, when this was offered to me, there was no way I could turn it down. And I feel like if I was in that position and somebody was like, here is the technology to ensure that your child is healthy and will have a future that is free from disease, you know?
Does it not bother you that not everyone has the same opportunity?
Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely. And that's problematic about the story, but the way that they're presented, they're already disgustingly privileged, and that's why she's hard to like.
Mm.
Why are you rubbing your face? I'm sorry, Colby.
No. I'm just thinking. This is my thinking face. That's all. My thinking face often looks like a
constipation. I was like, Colby's very disappointed in me right
now. No. It looks like a constipation face is my thinking face. Yeah. I understand your point. And Jeremy, you agree with this point?
I agree with that point, yeah. That the way this is presented, he didn't have another choice, and he was obligated to take this opportunity because it shouldn't even have been available to him, is what it, the way he's presented it.
So you fault the opportunity being available to him, not the fault him taking the opportunity.
Correct.
Hmm. What about her? Do you fault her for being angry about it?
Yes.
Or do you think that – how so, that's Sarah?
My initial reaction is just to be irritated with her for being so ungrateful for the opportunities that she has.
Yeah.
Power for good, you know?
To blame that, to somehow make it lessen the thing she's been successful at.
But doesn't it to some degree?
Sure. My parents were musicians, so I'm probably going to be, but that doesn't mean that I didn't get good at my instrument through practice.
Sure.
It's not like, you know, I don't have to practice as hard as other people do.
Yeah, except you're digging with a shovel and I'm digging with a spoon. Let's be honest. Like, I don't have, I hear about four notes. All the rest of them, everything's one of those four notes I hear.
Right. But even through practice, you could play an instrument. You could be a musician.
You'd have to work a lot harder, but...
You would have to work harder.
I could play a penny whistle, maybe.
Yeah. So, right. Her criticism or her anger at this is really misplaced because she can still accomplish great things. And just because she does yoga perfectly, how does that make it meaningless? Because she still had to work at it.
So, do you think her problem then... is not what is what she's measuring against? Like, instead of measuring against the other people in her class, she should be measuring against the best version of herself.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the same way we look at rock climbing. You're not competing against the other people there. You're always competing against yourself.
And it's like running.
Making yourself better.
Yeah, like running. Yeah.
You know,
which, by the way, Sarah, are you running?
I've had a couple of false starts.
The race is coming. The race is coming.
I know.
All right. We're doing it with or without you. We're doing it with you, actually. We're just going to have to.
We're
going to put you in a wheelbarrow and get you on the course.
This is why we need to keep meeting up, Colby, so that you can guilt me when I fall off.
I look at your Strava.
I know. It's been a couple weeks, right?
Yeah, I'm saying. Uh-huh. I didn't want to say nothing, but I'm saying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, you need to keep looking at my Strava. And now you can message me when you see me falling off the edge.
So, right? I'm going to message you and be like, hey.
But, anyways.
Yeah. So, here's my thing, though, right? Like, I get, and I'm just taking the other side of this, but the thing that I didn't like about the father's response and the thing that I didn't like about what he did was it was so blatantly accepting of the fact that, like, oh, yeah, no, we're rich. Like, this is what rich people do. we have better opportunities, we do better things, we do better we can do all the things that poor people can't do. And he's so comfortable with it.
Comfortable with his entitlement?
Comfortable with his entitlement. That's exactly the phrase it is. That there's a certain part of me that was like, you know what the responsible person would do? Is they would say, I understand that I have the right to this entitlement, but even if the laws permit me to do this,
wrong.
Right. It's wrong because it's wrong. Like, or the answer is, I'm allowed to do everything that I'm legally allowed to get away with. And I don't think from our previous discussions, I don't think we think that you're allowed to do everything you're legally allowed to get away with. That there are certain things that you just don't do because you don't do.
Because they're wrong.
Right.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I assumed that this would fall into that category for you guys. And it's cool if it doesn't. Like,
no, but that's a really good way to phrase it. That's what I was saying. It's just way too easy to agree with the father. We really need a little bit more struggle.
Well, the daughters.
And I think that's a good way to phrase the struggle is.
I mean, part of the issue is the daughter's argument is kind of a straw man argument. Like, her argument is, that's not fair. I don't like it. Her argument's not. It's not an argument. Yeah, it's a whiny argument. It's not a thoughtful. It's not. It's not an argument that you can take the side of because there's practically no argument there. Right.
Unlike the character in the previous story who was made a genetic neuter.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. All these
changes were an advantage to her, and she's still complaining.
Right.
So,
what was the neuter story? I don't even remember anymore the name of it.
She went to have an operation to...
a gender assignment operation.
Yeah, I just don't remember the name of the story, but that's all right. It was a great story, though. Yeah. It was like 2 or 3 ago.
I mean, it's a similar decision was made for them. You know,
That she can't undo.
That she can't undo.
Yeah.
You know, and you could argue both. There's an advantage to both of those genetic modifications.
Sure. But,
you know, in the case of the neuter, that person really had a legitimate, disability because of it.
Sure.
Where this character is not disabled.
No, she's enhanced.
Right.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It's hard to argue against. You know, hard to be angry at that. In that sense, when.
So is one of the themes in the story that we get angry with our parents? Our parents make decisions for us without our permission from birth, right?
Sure.
I chose the school that my kids go to because I think it is an excellent school. So I'm giving them an advantage over children who are at a different school. You know, but someday Hannah may look back on that and go, I hated that school.
Yeah, I never got this kind of experience that I wanted because I never interacted with other groups of people that I wouldn't have who didn't go to this school or whatever.
I mean, she can have a lot of gripes, you know? I mean,
Hi, this is Colby, and you are listening to After Dinner Conversation, short stories for long discussions. But you already knew that, didn't you? If you'd like to support what we do at After Dinner Conversation, head on over to our Patreon page at patreon.com/afterdinnerconversation. That's right, for as little as $5 a month, you can support thoughtful conversations like the one you're listening to. And as an ad incentive for being a Patreon supporter, you'll get early access to new short stories and ad-free podcasts, meaning you'll never have to listen to this blurb again. At higher levels of support, you'll be able to vote on which short stories become podcast discussions. And you'll even be able to submit questions for us to discuss during these podcasts. Thank you for listening, and thank you for being the kind of person that supports thoughtful discussion. Interacted with other groups of people that I wouldn't have who didn't go to this school or whatever.
I mean, she can have a lot of gripes, you know? I mean, what other kind of, you never put me in whatever class when I was a little kid. So now I don't have that, you know.
Never took typing.
So here's the father saying that he did all of this stuff right for her. And she's still mad. But so that's kind of interesting. Like our relationships with our parents are.
But what do you think is the base? So removing her sort of not great argument, like the it's not fair argument. What do you think is the underlying real basis for her argument with her father about this?
Well, is like, the clue at the end when she's waiting, she mentions that she thinks she's ready to have children?
And she's debating if she's going to do the same thing.
Okay.
And now she's
that's going the implication, to at least.
Have the same
okay.
choices.
Right.
So maybe the clue is in there.
That she's struggling with her own choices for her child.
Right.
And yeah. Yeah, I could see that. I understand your point that parents make these decisions for their kids, and sometimes they make them, without them being old enough to even understand the decisions. You know, like I assume that your kids never are going to know that, like, signing up to play football is an option. American football is an option, right? Because you just personally think, like, that's a concussion-inducing stupid sport. I'm just going to let those signups come and go, and you're not even going to know the sport exists. Unless you, like, later come to me and tell me about it. What would be your response then if they were mad about that? About, like, why did you make this choice for me? Because the father's answer is, like, because I don't want evil to exist. What's your response to your kid who's like, why didn't you ever tell me I could sign up for whatever?
The response would be the same, because I didn't want evil to exist. Yeah. Why didn't you sign up for piano?
Because I'm your parent.
Because I don't want evil to exist.
Man, you're still I'm still sad. My mom never made me stick with piano. You're just rubbing salt in the wound. Everybody's got those. Yeah.
You always make decisions based on the information that you have, what is available to you as a parent, and what you think is ultimately going to be the best for your child. So I think that's why his argument is so easy to identify with.
Yeah.
They're not even touching on any of the other problems, like...
All of the
other problems that we've already discussed when we get to these genetic enhancements.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just... I think I'm surprised that you guys are so okay with something that you've previously said that you thought created inequities that were unfair.
Well, it's certainly still... But again, the way it's presented from his point of view... And again, you're right. He is not thinking about
the... Society.
Right.
Like,
you know, it is...
Society isn't giving us privilege.
He's making this decision from a point of privilege, definitely.
Yeah. So you guys would both...
It's already a given in the story.
The what?
The privilege is a given in the story.
Sure. I don't think it should be, though. Like, I don't know. I don't have kids, so I maybe that's part of why my answer is wavery. There's some value, I think, this is just my own theory, that there is... there's value in failure. And there's Absolutely. Value in struggle, mm-hmm. and there's value in being bad at something. There's value in losing. And I know that's maybe a progressive-y sort of like everyone gets a participation ribbon sound, but I don't mean it to, because I don't think you should get a participation ribbon. I think you should get your butt handed to you. So, and you should go home and you should have a good cry over it, because now right. you know what that's like.
So does that mean she's not trying hard enough? She's not taking full advantage of her abilities and her gifts to do something more difficult that she has the potential to fail at.
So maybe that's the problem I have with it, right? Is maybe she didn't know, because they didn't tell her, she didn't know she was comparing herself to the wrong scale. Maybe right. that's it, right? Like you go to your yoga class and you're like, why do I need to try harder? I'm so good at yoga. And then one day somebody tells you, like, yeah, these other people in the class, like, this isn't the bar. This isn't your peer group.
Right.
Like, you're running the fastest of the slow people. Like, this other corral is the one you should be with, the Kenyan, that's the one you should be in.
So the conceit involved there is pretty adorable. She thinks she's awesome because
yes.
she is so good at these things.
Yeah.
And then she has discovered that she was genetically predisposed to be good at these things. And yeah. so now she's upset that she's not as cool as she thought she was. Is that what we're saying right
now? I think she's upset. I think that's why she's upset in the story. Is I think she's upset because she's been measuring herself against the wrong bar.
So she's not as cool as she thought she was.
Right. Yeah.
And she didn't know.
And she didn't know.
I'll grant her a little bit of a temper tantrum over that. Okay.
You do great in school, you do great in sports, you do great in everything. You're like, you're the smartest person you know. And it turns out the reason you're the smartest person you know is because you've been standing in the wrong room the whole time. That's why you're the smartest person.
You're a big fish in a little pond.
Yeah. Right.
But see, we are genetically like I was saying, our parents have given us gifts that we are not aware of.
You know? Sure.
And
that's one of the arguments her dad makes in the story, right? Is that he didn't get genetically enhanced, but he lucked into being a very smart guy. Mm-hmm. Along with, I'm sure, other things that helped along the way.
Right.
Yeah, we give ourselves credit for a lot of stuff, just like as naturally as she gave herself credit.
That may not have been.
But it's not really, it's.
Maybe not really, earned points.
Yeah, it's my parents' fault. You know? I don't know.
I guess I'm forgiving
her temper tantrum a little more now.
That's exactly, like, I'm going back and forth what I'm saying on this one too. I know I've done this a lot lately, but I think about how I would feel if I found out at 20 years old that I was born the 0.1 percentile in 10 different categories and nobody ever told me. Like, so that's another thing that I wonder about this story too. I mean, that would piss me off. It would genuinely piss me off if suddenly somebody was like, you know why you're so good at darts? Because you should be standing 3 feet further back than everybody else. Right?
Right.
And then I'm like, oh, I can give you a great example. Oh, this is totally a stupid. Okay, this is a. So you guys know I shot archery. When you shoot indoors, and I competed, you know, at the Olympic level. When you shoot indoors, you shoot at 18 meters indoors, roughly 20 yards. I went to maybe I've told this story. I'm sorry if I have. I went to this place in North Phoenix that had an indoor archery shop, and I would shoot every day. And when I was a senior in high school, and I was like setting like U.S. records in practice, crushing it. And then I went to state or nationals or something. It must have been state or something. And my scores dropped right back down to where they were, right? I went from like national records to like, you know, top two or three in the state. And I came back and I was like, man, I can't figure this out. And then just in passing, the guys at the archery shop were like, what's wrong? And I'm like, man, I've been shooting your 18 meter range and I'm killing it. And I go to the thing. And I'm not doing as good. And he's like, it's a 16 meter range. And I'm like, what?
Wow.
And he's like, I should have known.
Right. And I was like every bit of self-esteem I had about my accomplishments and how hard I'd been working just were like, you didn't freaking, actually, freaking wasn't the word I used. You didn't freaking tell me, right? Like I'm not who I thought I was. Right. Is basically what it was telling me, right?
That is a really good example.
And that was really hard to take. And so then I tried to convince myself. I was like, as long as I can trick my brain into thinking I'm that kind of shooter, like my body will force that round peg in that square hole and my self-identity will, my body will match my identity. And I could never really get it to happen. Because I was just practicing at the wrong, like, it was stupid. It was right. Like, if you go and, you know, you do a swim meet and it's a 23 meter pool you've been practicing in and you go to the meet and it's a 25 meter pool and you're just like, man,
wait,
like,
something's wrong here.
Yeah. I was so mad. And I guess maybe that's why I can understand why she'd be so mad. It's not that they did it. It's that they didn't tell her they did it.
Right.
Right. Interesting.
I don't know. All right. This might be a short discussion. We're totally allowed short discussions, I think.
This was a shorter story, wasn't it?
It was a shorter story.
Yeah, it's a pretty short story.
Yeah, it was a pretty short story.
Well, tell me about your interpretation of the ending there, Colby. The crushed Christmas ornament. And
waiting for him to say the words.
So she crushed the Christmas bauble in her hand, injuring herself. Dad turned pale. Blood flowed from the punctured skin and a few drops fell on the white carpet. Pain and fear, her heart beat faster. How many tragedies did the real idol have? how much blindness. Jane looked at her father and waited. She waited for him to say the words. He remained silent. I did not understand what that ending meant. I've got to be honest.
Okay. And I didn't know what to make of it either.
And I didn't read it and it was like, eh, whatever. Like, I read it and I paused and I reread it and then I paused and I reread it. I don't know. I wish the author was here in this one case. Maybe he'll email me and he can tell us.
Yeah.
I assumed that it was meant, here's what I thought, and this is, you know why I shouldn't have done this. I assumed it was the author trying to come up with a clever ending that just had a clever sort of like, you know, like, and then they right. stared at each other and the clock struck 12. But now that I'm rereading it, like the things like how much blindness, she looked at her and her father say the words. I don't know what those words were she was waiting for.
I thought that maybe because she, before this says, I thought about becoming a parent, you know, and no matter what I do, I'll be deciding who will my child be. Before I was powerless and left to the chaos of nature, and maybe it was easier to live this way. So this is what she's upset about, that she thought she could just leave this to nature, the child's going to be who it's going to be, but now she has an option to make that change, and is that the question she's waiting for him to say is, do you want this power?
Oh, like, I still know people who can do this.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah, I don't know. And I think she does it, by the way. I think, I think every parent does it. Mm-hmm. Like, I think, and this is the difference between, like, that order that you always see where it's, like, faith, family, country, or whatever the order is. In Texas, maybe the order is different.
Yeah.
But, like while you might feel like you have some obligation to society to not use this, I think every parent does, right? If they can legally do it and not go to jail for it, I think you do. Like what you're saying, Sarah, like you might have sort of like moral moral issues with it from a societal standpoint. But when it's your kid,
you make the choice.
You just do it. You just do what you got to do.
Yep.
So, all right, one last question, then we'll move on. Because I get it. We don't have to belabor this. It's a great story. It's just, but I think, I think without more from the daughter's argument side.
Well, the ending is a conundrum.
It is a little bit. There are parents who don't put their kid in private schools because they want their kid to have a more public, authentic experience. How is that different than the genetic, or is it not different than the genetic engineering sort of thing? Like, you know that in a private school, they're getting a better education. You know they are.
Not necessarily. Depends on...
Maybe it depends on the private school. But like, you can look up some data and you can drive your kid 45 minutes to like whatever, fancy town. Do you think those parents are making the wrong choice then?
So, interestingly enough, I chose a school that is... really different than the school that they were originally going to, like the neighborhood school near their father.
Yeah.
Is a very affluent school.
Yeah.
Most of the students are white. It feeds into a junior high that's similar and into a high school that is, you know, also a very good school. But I wanted them to go to a school in a neighborhood where the student body would be more diverse.
Sure. That makes sense.
And that way Hannah and Nolan will grow up knowing that not everybody's exactly like them.
Yeah.
So I've chosen a different type of,
type of elitism.
Like, yeah, exactly. Thank you.
I mean, I don't want to put a point on
so
it,
it's but like,
yeah.
Some people will put their kids in the all white affluent neighborhood school because it's similar to that private school thing that you're talking about.
Yeah.
And some people are like, that's not what I want for my child to grow up around or with. So they purposefully move them to a more inner city school.
But an inner city private school?
No, they're a public school.
Okay. And what's your opinion on the parents that do that?
What? Private schools?
No, that go that decide to not put them in the private school, to put them in an inner city school so that they can have a more, you know, you can use lots of adjectives, well-rounded, diverse,
right,
whatever.
For sure. Well, I mean, obviously that's the choice that I made, but there, you have to do what's right for your kid. You know, I work with a lot of public school teachers and we all swear up and down, never put our kids in a charter school, never put our kids in a private school. But I do know some people who have had to go the private school route because of the needs of their child.
Yeah.
You know, and so you always make choices based on what you think is going to be best for your children. And so no judgment either way, you know. Yeah. Except for maybe charter schools. Just kidding.
Interestingly,
but I have plenty of people who do that.
Interestingly
too.
Enough, some of the people I know who are the biggest advocates against charter schools have their children in charter schools, and I've asked them why they do that, and they're like, "I don't think charter schools should exist. I think they're terrible." But
while they're here, I'm going to take advantage of them.
Right.
Yep.
I'll lobby to get rid of them while my child is currently in one.
Yep.
Yeah, and I feel like that's the same thing with the law, right? You might lobby to get rid of the genetically enhancement law while you are willing taking to pay it, while you're taking advantage of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a weird obligation as a parent. It's this weird sort of split between your duties to society and your duties to your child.
And it's like she says, no matter what I do, I will be deciding who my child will be. It is a huge responsibility. Yeah. Parenting is a massive responsibility, and you have to parent intentionally. Well, you don't have to, but, you know, it's my goal to parent intentionally, to make choices about the things that will have an impact on
right
the
here.
Kids.
Jeremy, I wasn't going to say another minute. You may, you know, it's like that movie Slacker.
We've talked about this before, though. You agree with me.
It's about the movie Slacker, Jeremy. Not making a choice is a choice. That Linkletter movie,
the lack of making choices also decides who your child is going to be. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a roll of the dice, no matter what.
Yeah,
honestly, you do the best you can, but you never know how it's going to turn out.
Yeah. Anything else you guys want to add to this? I don't want to belabor something that maybe we don't have as much to talk about as I thought we were going to. But you guys, you did not go where I thought you were going with this when I picked it. So that's okay.
I'm glad we could. I'm glad we could surprise you today.
Yeah. No. Like, what is it? Like 50 something podcasts in, you guys still surprise me.
Yay.
Yeah.
Good.
All right. Hey, so you've been listening to After Dinner Conversation, Short Stories for Long Discussions. Like, subscribe, support us on Patreon. Go to our website, afterdinnerconversation.com. Get our magazine, $4.95 a year. If you use the discount code HAPPY at checkout, you'll get it every single month, 7 new stories with discussion questions. And you can do the same thing we're doing with your friends. Except, you know, with beer, probably would work better. But that's it. All right, I'll talk to you guys later.
All right, bye.
Bye.
If you've enjoyed listening to this, please like and subscribe. It helps us out a ton. You know, the vast majority of people listen haven't liked and subscribed, which means maybe it shows up in your algorithm, maybe it doesn't. So don't leave that to chance. Just go ahead and hit that button, and we'd sure appreciate that. And that way we can keep doing what we're doing, and you're not left to the whims of some algorithm. Thanks.